having an early recording session today, so we all left our homes early and arrived here promptly at 9 a.m. And I saw, as I was driving down my street, I saw ahead of me, and I live on a shared bike and car road. I saw somebody on a bike. Well, I thought I saw two people on a bike or on bikes ahead of me. And as I approached, I realized, no, it's one person on a bike and one person in a shopping cart. And the person on the bike had a rope tied to the shopping cart.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And was towing.
Yes.
Was towing the shop. And it wasn't like a full-size shopping cart. It was one of the ones where it's like two baskets.
Mm-hmm. Oh, were they in the Kat, top basket?
These are the only people who know how to live.
Kat, yeah. I have a really important question.
Yeah.
Were there propane tanks in the shopping cart?
They could fit those in the bottom basket.
They could have. They could have. No, it was wasted. Wasted. Bottom basket.
Jesus.
It just, they Some had people. Somebody in the top basket, somebody being towed.
How old?
Older than you would think.
Like adults.
Like our age?
Like our age adults.
I mean, they sound fucking cool.
They're the only people who know how to live.
Listen, there's a sort of thing where I see that and I go, that's an activity for mid-afternoon. It was instead being done at 8:30 in the morning. So
yeah, because they're beating the heat.
Because they're the only people who know how to live.
They're doing it before it gets too hot and humid.
Rise and grind.
Yeah, dude.
So I just, either they've been up all night towing a shopping cart.
Yeah, baby.
Or they got up early and went, want to get in the shopping cart and be towed on a bike?
God, I wish that were me.
Dude, yes.
Me and who?
I'll pull you.
I would love that.
I'll get on my bike. I'll tie a tow rope to a shopping cart. I'll tow you along.
I'm really happy to hear that, like, even though you moved to a physically different neighborhood, that the energy has followed you there.
Honestly, same. I was going to say the same fucking thing.
Last year when we first moved, I thought this neighborhood's normal and normal. There's a lost intro where I lamented how normal my neighborhood was, and I just didn't know it well enough yet.
I'm so happy.
I mean, I feel like, yeah, that can be true of a lot of neighborhoods. It's normal when you move in and then
you're there long enough and you see the weirdos come out.
I never see any fucking weirdos in my neighborhood. It sucks.
Well, what the heck?
Maybe one day.
Sorry, dude.
I see tons of weirdos.
That's awesome.
I see tons of little kids around here. There's just like random kids.
I mean, little kids are weird as hell.
They're fucking weird as hell.
They are, but you know, they make the world go round.
Yeah,
they sure do.
That's what I love.
They're our future.
Absolutely.
No jokes.
Wow.
Something to think about.
The children are our
They're
future.
Gonna be the ones driving the Venga bus.
Just something to think about.
Something to think about, bro.
In the Venga bus extended universe.
Yep. I refuse to make any intros that work as singular units in time. They all have to have a complex lore that interties them that you are forced to listen to every single one in order to have any idea what the fuck is going on, and even then you're still going to be confused.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a good way to record a podcast, and with that, let's play some D&D. My name is Kat, and I'm towing someone on a bus. Nope.
The Venga bus is back.
I am on the bike, and I am towing the Venga bus.
And that's the song it's playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you, the bottom basket, you put a boombox in it,
dude.
And it's playing Venga. Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, that's good.
Bro.
That's quite
that
good.
Would, oh, yes.
Like, the emotion of being in that would be so good.
It would be unstoppable.
It would be a high unlike any other. Drugs who?
Immaculate.
Drugs who?
Drugs who? Noelle, introduce yourself.
Sorry. Hello, my name is Noelle, and I play Fran, who is a Genasi wizard of the 11th level, but also plus one level in Rogue, so she's overall level 12.
Wow, that was nice. Really efficient and professional.
Yeah.
I'm Errol, and I am being towed on the bicycle of life, and I play Slake, a half-orc fighter, level 12.
Isn't it my turn to go after Noelle?
It is.
I'm sorry.
Isn't it my fucking turn to go after Noelle?
I was looking at the physical order of our bodies and I got confused.
It's okay, Errol. We forgive you.
It's fine. I'm Juniper. And I'm going to put Errol in the shopping cart and cut the rope. Okay. And I play Corbin.
Okay, so last time, Mary woke up after her ordeal, and she can do more now. But at what cost? We'll find out later. For now, she has started opening big old portals and pulling your allies through them. So far, you've got some storm gods. You've got Ava. You've got the Gray. They've all arrived. You've gotten some troops from your various allies around the world. And then, with a clip clop, with a clatter, with a jingle of bells, your very favorite person in all of the worlds has appeared, along with his table and his wares, before you, in front of you, in all his resplendent glory. Dawson smiles at you and says, "Hello, travelers, although I suppose I'm the traveler today, coming to you here in this rather alarmingly ragtag army."
Don't call us that.
We don't need
don't
your fucking
that.
Opinions.
Why did you come
shit.
Here just to insult us?
I mean, it's pretty bold of you to
you're
come
a shithead.
Into a camp full of, you know, people who an could, army like, that we've managed to
kill
amass.
You.
And
we literally every person in here is a certified god killer, so you better watch out.
Yeah. Even the gods who are here are gods killer, god killer, killer gods.
Killer gods of gods.
Yes.
Dawson puts a hand to his heart and then looks to Mary. "Is our agreement no longer in place?" And Mary kind of grumbles and then signs, "No, it still is. I'll make sure you survive." Then she looks back at you guys and signs, "And that means we can't kill him as much as we want to."
Death isn't the worst fate.
Yeah, worst shit could happen to you.
"Well, I suppose then you don't want any of these fine wares." And he motions to his table. "Oh, I understand that perhaps your coins may be tied up in other places. I'm sure this army of yours is not cheap to feed or clothe or equip in any way. But I know that you have a few more interesting items that you aren't using, and I would take those in trade. How does that sound?"
"Oh. What do you have?"
"Well, let's find out, my friends." Time to shop.
I am ready for this. I'm very excited.
I thought you...
I hate the man, but I love his wares.
I love his wares.
So, on Dawson's table, in front of you on Dawson's table, you see a small silver case with 5 silver bullets inside. There's also armor made of an iridescent gray metal bolted to soft leather with sparkling chainmail protecting the joints. There's also a backpack made in bright, silly colors that when you pick it up seems very light. Next to that is a jet black sword, and Dawson leans forward when you start looking at it and says, "Now this is a very interesting piece. It contains shards from the sword of Belius."
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Fran elbows Slake.
Yeah, Corbin also elbows Slake.
I don't know. That sounds kind of fucked up.
"My agents went through no small amount of peril to bring the shards from the wilds to forge into this blade. Simply saying, it is a one-of-a-kind piece." So next to the sword, there is a pipe with the bowl carved in the shape of a prancing capybara, which smells very soapy. Next to that, there's a little black cauldron carved with intricate geometric patterns. Dawson looks at you, Corbin. He says, "Now this piece I found in a temple to some nature gods. I couldn't say which. As a druid, you may find this particularly interesting." And he gives it a little tap.
"Dawson, I hate you. But I did look at that cauldron, and the first thought I had was, I bet that could brew a mean cup of crow tea. So, I'll consider it.
Next to the cauldron, there's a pair of silk gloves so fine they are almost see-through.
Oh.
And next to that is a small vial of void black ink and a silver needle. So, that is what Dawson has for sale. What are you guys interested in?
I'm interested in those bullets. Obviously, I have my gun.
Oh, I wanted them just to chew on.
Well, I'm surrounded by people who want to chew on weird shit. I would love some bullets. I would love to know more about them, though.
All right. Do you want to identify on them?
Yeah, I'm going to cast Identify.
The bullets do not seem to have any particularly special properties. However, you can tell they would hurt a lot.
Okay, so maybe not magical, but like powerful?
Yes.
Okay. I also want to cast Identify on the needle and the ink.
So this, by contrast, is very magical. It is a tattoo needle and ink. And on a scale of like 1 to 9, this is like level 4 powerful.
Okay. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into it. Also, I need a tattoo needle.
For reasons.
For reasons.
For reasons. Okay. All right. So you want these things. What are you going to give in trade?
Fran starts digging through the bag of holding, and like weird stuff is coming out. There's like half-eaten sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
This is really where the chaos of Fran's mind is reflected.
Yes.
Half-eaten sandwiches, half-read books.
Yeah, none of us ever bother to question, like, what else goes in there besides our personal belongings.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, random shit and, like, garbage. Like, specifically, like, a lot of, like, loose papers that only have, like, one sentence written on them. And so she starts, like, sorting things out into piles. And so I think she has the Rod of Burning, which is an item from Dawson that Leica bought and then gave to Fran, that Fran hasn't used a ton. I have 1 4-speed left. She has a monkey belt that she doesn't really use.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some fancy clothes, some warm clothes from the mountain. Mm. And she has, like, a quarterstaff that she never uses.
Okay. Dawson looks over your things and he says, well, I think next time I speak with my agents, I will have them find a item that helps with organization.
I don't know why you're saying that. I found everything I needed to find.
And we have been standing here for 15 minutes, haven't we?
That didn't feel like that to me.
I can't tell time.
I thought you were immortal, Dawson.
Yeah, hey. Yeah. Why does this even bother you? Why do you even care?
Isn't that like a second for you?
Yeah.
Idiot.
Drop in the ocean.
You would be so surprised how long a immortal life seems to take when you must stand and watch a teenage girl sort out her belongings.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not our problem.
Now, speaking of all of those belongings, I will take that belt and that rod, which I believe I sold you originally, but I will take back when I think that will buy you at least the needle and ink, and yes, I think I'll take those very fancy clothes. Diamond will look fantastic in that. And then the silver bullets are yours. Thank you very much for doing business with me.
Okay, well, this was suspiciously cordial. Thanks for nothing. And everything's in neat piles, and there's like one that's garbage, but she shoves everything back.
Yeah.
And Dawson touches his heart, and he says, you wound me, Franika. We are allies now.
I'd love to wound you.
Good one.
All right, what about Slake?
Yes, okay. So Slake is kind of deliberating, trying to make a decision, looking at different things. They're like, I'm really curious about the backpack, but the gloves are really pretty, and they're kind of translucent, so, like, maybe it's, like, an invisibility thing. But then again,
you need to get the swords.
Yes, Slake, are you forgetting something?
Which thing?
The sword, the magical god sword.
I cannot do this.
Well, I don't know. To kill gods.
Oh my god.
I mean, I haven't. I usually use picks or an axe. Like, I don't. I mean, is it never too soon?
Slake.
Well, can you guys tell? Like, is it really good?
I step forward. I cast identify.
Okay.
The Bellius sword. Which I'm assuming is going to, like, corrupt my mind with forbidden knowledge.
It does not corrupt your mind with forbidden knowledge, but you get, like, a very intense, like, vision isn't even the right word for it.
Mm-hmm.
You just see so much blood and a dragon falling from the sky.
Cool. Fran stays silent for a minute. And silently pulls her hand back and nods and says,
yeah, it's a good sword. Okay, okay. I think it's a good sword. You guys think I should get it?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it can kill a dragon.
Oh, well, we'll need that, I suppose. okay. Well, let's see what I got. I'll definitely take the sword then. And then I like the backpack, and the gloves are kind of cheap. So, let's see. I've got this dwarven piston axe, and then the trailblazer beetles, and I have some older armor. And then, oh yeah, Fran, and I mm-hmm. take the bag of holding and start to rummage around, and then I
dump it all back out. it takes at least like a good 30 seconds of like shaking it.
Nice, nice.
Everything to just go.
I know they're in here somewhere. We found those ruby earrings in Torva's temple. I bet those are worth something.
I find them stuck in a dirty plate.
Here they are.
There we go, I say, and like I pick them up and they're like dripping like
sauce,
like yeah, some sort of
ketchup,
chili sauce, and I say, is that enough?
That. Mm-hmm. And he paused through it a bit and goes, I'll say that's enough for the silk gloves and backpack. But this sword is worth quite a lot. I don't know. Have anything else? Anything shiny?
Shiny.
What do you mean?
Well, I have a little bit of money that I won at the casino and some stuff I was saving from before. So I pull out my 417 silver.
Well, I suppose in conjunction with everything else and... Oh, yes, and yes, that too, yes. All right. It pains me to part with it. It is such a valuable piece, but I did have it collected with your little adventure in mind, so I'll part with it for the low price of all these fine goods.
Okay,
cool. Like a scam.
I mean, I think it's a good sword.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like at this point, currency doesn't really mean a lot to me, considering the current stakes of our situation.
The real currency is blood.
You make a good point, both of you.
All right. And I will reveal what all of these things are after we finish buying. Corbin.
All right. Fran, can you do your thing on the pipe?
I think I only got like one more in me, so.
Okay, well.
Which one do you want?
I know I'm gonna get the cauldron because I just have a feeling about the crow tea.
Ugh.
So I wanna know about the pipe.
All right.
Thank you.
Fran casts identify on the pipe.
You feel a little bit giggly, Fran. And you can tell that this pipe. It can do a number of small spells. And it also seems to have some sort of a summoning capability.
What the hell, Fran? What's going on?
Okay.
I don't know. I just feel... I don't know.
Yeah, it's fucked up. You know what?
It does, like, a bunch of shit.
You know what?
What?
It might
like
not...
Like, small things. I don't know.
It might not be useful for the big battle, but I think it'll be good. Sounds like it's probably going to maybe help us calm our nerves a little bit before the big fight. So let's go with the pipe. And the cauldron, please, Mr. Douchebag.
Well, perhaps I'll raise the price. What are you going to
do? I said please. I have... Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not... Oh! I have some things that I can give you.
We started out our relationship so contentiously, Corbin. Do you remember that? Do you remember trying to steal from me?
I don't regret it.
We've come so far since then.
You made the right choice.
Ah, yes, but you've never tried to steal from me again, have you?
Nope. Not yet. Okay, I have some boots of striding and springing that I could give to you. And I have some dwarven gauntlets with shocking grasp enchanted into them that I could give to you.
Yes.
And I probably have like a few coins. How does that sound?
Corbin, in light of our long shared history, I'll part with it for that plus your coins.
Yeah, I shouldn't have offered the coins. Okay. Here you go.
Corbin gives all of those things over to Dawson.
It's a pleasure doing business with you. Now, I will take this and this lovely outfit, and I believe... yes, I believe he should be arriving soon. Please, I hope to see you all at the concert tonight.
What?
Wearing my clothes?
Oh my god, Fran, that's like an indirect kiss.
Fran, why do you have so many fucking boyfriends, Fran? I can't stand you sometimes.
Fran's got so many boyfriends that Corbin doesn't even have one.
Fran's a statistical outlier.
Should not be counted. Arvin, your boyfriend's here too.
I don't have a boyfriend. Mm-hmm.
That's or a friend.
That's the problem. No. That's not a good joke.
That was a good one.
Fairly good.
I think I spit on him one time. That doesn't count.
Spit on Phelan one time. You like him.
Yeah, but like, I'm not dating him. Am I? Am I, Fran? Am I? Because real friends would share, wouldn't they? Listen, it's fine.
I'm not mad.
I'm not mad.
All right, so here's what you guys have purchased. Fran's silver bullets. That is ammunition +3. So that is
nice.
But +3 to attack or to hit and +3 damage.
Nice. Okay, cool.
Yep, so you have 5 silver bullets. And then the tattoo needle and ink. This is a spell wrought tattoo at 4th level. This magic tattoo contains a single spell up to 4th level wrought on your skin by a magic needle. Once the tattoo is there, you can cast its spell, retiring no material components. The tattoo glows faintly while you cast the spell and for the spell's duration. Once the spell ends, the tattoo vanishes from your skin.
Ooh. So it's kind of like you prepare a spell.
Yes, it's basically an extra 4th level spell slot.
That's cool.
Wow.
That you get to prepare. Nice. And you have a tattoo needle for all your tattooing needs.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
The Philly colored backpack.
Oh, yes.
It is a balloon pack.
What? Okay.
This backpack contains the spirit of an air elemental in a compact leather balloon. While you're wearing the backpack, you can deploy the balloon as an action to gain the effect of the levitate spell for 10 minutes, targeting yourself and requiring no concentration.
Hell yes!
Aerial strikes!
Alternatively, you can use a reaction to deploy the balloon when you're falling and gain the effect of feather fall on yourself.
Oh, that's cool. Fuck yes. That's really nice.
All right. The sword, the jet black sword, it is a +1 bonus to attack and damage rolls and it is magical attacks. It's a magic weapon. However, even more exciting, when you hit a dragon with this weapon, the dragon takes an extra 3d6 damage.
Yo!
Oh my god, hell yeah.
Dude, we're going to be tag teaming the dragon.
Well, I can get up there now because I have a balloon.
Yes!
All right, so the silk gloves. These gloves seem to almost meld into your hands when you don them.
Seems bad, normal.
Bad. Not a good sign. Not a good
they
sign.
They seem great. Seem almost. They don't actually. Unlike Mr. Wentles. But when a ranged weapon attack hits you while you are wearing them, you can use your reaction to reduce the damage by 1d10 plus your dexterity modifier, provided that you have a free hand. If you reduce the damage to 0, you can catch the missile if it is small enough to hold in your hand.
That's wild.
That's cool. So you get to catch shit?
You can, like, catch arrows, yeah. All right. Next is the capybara pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So the pipe has 3 charges, and it regains all spent charges daily at dawn. While you hold the pipe, you can expend charges to gain access to the following properties. 1. For 1 charge, you can cast Fog Cloud as an action. For 2 charges, you can cast Misty Step as a bonus action.
Ooh, that's cool.
For all three charges, you can summon a steam mephit as an action. Ooh. The mephit is friendly to you, obeys your verbal commands, and acts on its own turn in the initiative order. It disappears in a harmless puff of steam after 1 minute, or it ends its turn more than 60 feet from the pipe.
Wow, that's nice. Cool. You got a little steam buddy.
Yeah.
Tiny cauldron. You can use the cauldron as a spell casting focus for your spells, components for your scrying spell, whatever. We don't care about that stuff. As an action, you can cause the cauldron to grow large enough for a medium creature to crouch within. You can revert the cauldron to its normal size as an action, harmlessly shunting anything that can't fit inside into the nearest unoccupied space. If you place the corpse of a humanoid in the cauldron and cover the corpse with 200 pounds of salt for at least 8 hours, the salt is consumed and the creature returns to life as if by raised dead. Once used, this property can't be used again for 7 days.
What?
What would we do with that?
Well, you guys, if one of us dies...
I can reanimate them as a zombie, yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty good news. We got at least one get out of death free card.
Do we have any salt?
Well, we'll buy some before we go. I mean, put it in a bag of holding.
It doesn't sound like you come back good.
Yeah, well, would you want to come back? Do you want to come back good? Do you want to not come back? You want to come back?
I don't know.
Come back.
All right, so that is the cauldron. You can stick one dude. Creature in the cauldron,
Let's
and it will be stuck.
Put Torva in the cauldron.
Put Torva in the cauldron. Put him in the cauldron.
Get him in the cauldron.
It's all like right. When you put a bug under a cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Like
that's
that.
Exactly it. Basically, the cauldron is a big cup that you can put over a bug. All right. So as you all are looking through your new items, Dawson takes the gold and the things that you've given him in trade, and he sort of shoves them all into a sack from which he pulls out his own red carpet that he unrolls for himself. And as you leave him, he waves and he says, please, enjoy Diamond's show. Let him know that he's a very good boy and I'm very proud of him. Goodbye.
Horrible. Okay.
Hello, it's me, Noelle, here for a mid-roll on this dark November Eve. Hello. First and foremost, I must tell you about a project that my good friend Juniper has taken part in. And by taking part, I mean they literally created it from their own brain and put it to paper and made images as if they were unto a god. By which I mean, Juniper has been releasing a really awesome webcomic called Blood Memory, which you can get to by going to legendlark.com/bloodmemory. It's so cool. It has tons of visual memory flashback things that are visually striking as the main character uncovers the story of a dying man. To give Juniper's summary, it's a short comic about an undercover angel of death who's doing his best to keep burnout at bay while working to save other supernatural beings from an evil organization that's hunting them. At least he has a cute vampire boyfriend. If I understand correctly, this is actually a small spinoff or side comic of a bigger story and a much longer comic that Juniper is currently working on. So again, I would definitely head on over to legendlark.com/bloodmemory if you want to check out some spooky, scary, cutie, funny little comic about an angel of death and a cutie little vampire boyfriend. Juniper has worked their butt off on their comics lately, and it really shows. And I'm really excited for you all to check it out. So again, that is legendlark.com/bloodmemory. If I say it enough times, you will go there. legendlark.com/bloodmemory. legendlark.com/bloodmemory. Go to there immediately. All right, thank you. I just am feeling amazing. I just am in a great state of mind. This morning, I took my dog out in the city for a walk, and I was walking him in a stupor, and I looked down at him. I said, Googie, why don't you have a leash, a collar, or a harness? Why are you naked in the world, unattached to me, ready to run off at any moment? It was like I had woken up from sleepwalking and my dog was just there. I don't know why I did that, but that's kind of like just where I'm at. I've been very, very busy, and I just wanted to thank you guys so much for all the patience that you have had as our posting schedule, and in particular, my editing schedule has been erratic. I promise that it's not due to lack of wanting to make episodes, but just simply due to not having the faculties and the time. These episodes as well are just like truly, as Kat said, patching together little shoestrings and fibers into a new coat. So I just wanted to let you guys in on kind of the timeline we're looking at here. So obviously, like, the Guardians in this stage are kind of in their planning stages. I'm gonna go ahead and tell you there's gonna be one more episode before the final battle starts, and then we're just gonna be going just fucking insane for several episodes. Okay, so while the end of the podcast certainly is nigh in terms of the like 7 years we've spent working on it, it's gonna be like a few months before we get to the end. So I just, like, you know, I've seen people in the comments kind of being like, oh my god, the final battle is about to start, and like, you know, previously our battles have been like one episode and then that's the end of the arc. That's not exactly what we're doing here at the end. I just wanted to give you a little peek behind the curtain so that you can plan your sadnesses accordingly. We got some things to sort out. It's not just about getting back into Rudeval, but it is going to be just us going completely ham until the end. So, yeah, get ready for that. But that does pose really, really hard episodes to edit, really, really, really involved episodes to make the soundtrack for and to choose the music for. So I hope that you will continue to have patience with me as I try my absolute hardest to get episodes out as often as I possibly can. Our next episode should be coming out the 29th on Patreon, the 30th of November for everyone. And it'll be our little November treat before we delve into the wintriest months. Anyway, thank you for your patience, and thank you also to our brand new patrons. That goes out to Cage Fighter. Thank you. That goes out to Enemy of Krenemies. Thank you. That goes out to Molly Mazing. Thank you. Hungry as the Fox. Thank you. Jenny. Thank you. Harvard Beats. Thank you. And Karima. Thank you. I also wish to thank the Apple Podcast reviewers. Thank you so much to Noplinks, no Plinks. And thank you to AJoy39, who said that our podcast is like if God of War was about 14s with no social skills who just make it work. And thank you also to Bobcat Momstead. You guys are out there doing the Lord's goddamn work. Thank you so much. We also have a lovely message from our store at legendlark.store. This is from the Posy Tree, who says, "To my love Mariah, the Wandering Oasis, I'm hoping to return the message of love you had sent to our favorite podcast to say that since your message, I have proposed to you and I can't wait for our last names to be the same. I love you and I hope there are more happy memories to come. The code word is, I'm the map." Which I guess I'm, oh, Chantel, I guess that's the code word. I'm the map. The sleeper agent is active. Go.
The days pass in a blur of controlled chaos as your allies stream in from all corners of the world. But once they are assembled, you look across the valley outside of Estra and see that an army has come together on your doorstep. Fighters from every corner, in every shape, have shown up to lend their support. It's been rainy ever since the storm gods arrived, with brief patches of sunny weather only when someone reminds them of the damp. No one has managed to give them the reminder on the way to the evening of your first war council. The leaders of all the major fighting forces have gathered in the library, looking at the maps and tokens in front of them and quietly discussing numbers and supply lines. Tanavine is there, as is General Olivia and Princess Om, who managed to convince his complaining father to go back to Danmar and protect their people.
Damn it!
I know.
I wanted that old man to be in the battle with me.
So did I. You think I didn't want that too?
I needed to hear the crunch of his old bones.
Oh. Wow, someone's a pervert.
That's right.
So Safia and Laika are there as well. The smaller groups of fighters have all aligned themselves under one of these leaders and have worked out a hierarchical structure amongst themselves. Mary is waiting for the three of you just outside the door and gives you all a nervous smile. "We have to be serious in there," she signs to you and looks each of you individually in the eyes. "No suggesting dumb joke plans, okay?"
"What? We don't do that."
"Mary, I've never told a joke in my life."
Good one, Corbin.
Every word out of this mouth is really serious.
Corbin, I don't think that really makes me feel any better.
Well,
let's just... All right. We are professionals. We are important.
All of us.
All of us. And we're going to be serious and grown up about this.
Yes.
Hands in. Grown-ups on three.
1, 2, 3. Grown-ups!
Okay. Let's go.
Okay. I don't feel better.
I feel fine.
Mary opens the doors to the library and everyone looks up at you. And Mary looks at them and glances back at you guys and signs very small, "Grown-ups."
"Yes, we're just four professional adults attending a business meeting."
"You got that right, Slake."
Yeah, Mary looks to Safia, who gives a tired smile and a nod and goes, "All right, it seems we're all assembled now." Mary stands by Safia at the head of the table and signs, "All right, why don't we go over the information that we have?" Safia nods and gestures to the map on the table. "So," she says, "our scouts and your scrying? Is that what you call it? The magic water stuff?"
"Oh, that is... excuse me. Yes, that is one term. Yes."
"Great. All right. So we have managed to gather quite a bit of information here." And she points to the tokens on the map. "Torva's surface forces are concentrated here and here, in Rudval and Onya. Reports state that Onya is choked with monsters, something on wing. However, the scouts we sent were forced to retreat before they even got close enough to look at the thing, and, the other scouting measures?" She looks over at Mary, who supplies to the rest of the group, "Ava's birds." And Safia nods, "Right, yes, they've had the same issue. However, we're fairly sure that the outsized presence of monsters in the area means they have fewer mortal troops. Now, our main obstacle will be Rudval. This is where the majority of his troops are stationed. He's strung a chain across the harbor to block ships coming or going, and his troops are dug deeply into the city. The rest of his troops are still in Hero's Gate here." So Mary nods at the map, and she signs, "So the first thing we have to decide is how we want to approach the Dwarven continent."
Oh, Fran raises her hand.
Mary points at you, but looks like a little surprised that you're raising your hand.
Thank you. So our entry point really depends on where the Burning Ones are headed.
the burning ones. And Safia sits up a little straighter and she says, I didn't know you'd gotten them involved.
Well, yes and no. Basically what we did is we're trying to manipulate them into arriving first of all to clear the way for us a little bit. We gave them a target to make them the enemy of our enemy. But we don't know exactly when they're going to arrive or where they're going to approach. So first, Corbin, we need to check in with our agent, so to speak.
How do you commune with Slugbird? Have we ever established?
Okay, so the spell that I can use is scrying. And basically I can see and hear a particular creature that I choose that's on the same plane of existence as me. The target normally has to make a wisdom saving throw, but they can choose to fail it if they know, you know.
And Gary would choose to fail.
Yeah, Gary would choose to fail. And then...
So basically you can communicate with Gary.
Yeah, so yeah, it creates a 10-foot invisible sensor around the target. Mm. And then you can see and hear through the sensor as if you were there. And if he has information to convey, he can speak it out loud and I'll be able to hear it.
Okay.
But can Gary speak out loud?
Yes.
Yeah. How do you think he's communicated to us in the past?
Gary doesn't have a mouth, but yes, he can speak out loud.
He can obviously speak out loud.
This is...
I don't know why you look so confused.
So obvious.
Don't remember him ever speaking out loud.
No, yeah, he speaks out loud in every scene that he's in, so...
He's literally had verbal fights with Darius before.
Yeah, but that's Darius and
no, I
Gary,
mean,
that's different.
Like, he's spoken to me.
To Noelle.
He's spoken to me.
We've never spoken.
Well, I guess maybe Gary doesn't like you. Maybe there's a reason Gary doesn't speak to you.
Maybe you should try reaching out to Gary more.
All right. Like, so speaking of Gary, Corbin, we're at the war table, and Corbin casts, what's the spell called?
Scrying.
All right. Corbin, you're going to scry on Gary, and this is what you see. You see the bars of a cage.
No!
It seems that Gary is in, like, a little, you know, those sort of, like, cricket cages.
No.
That people will keep little bugs in.
Yeah.
Gary's in a crude little cage made
of sticks. Why would they capture Gary? He is a normal slug.
With wings and feet.
There's no reason that anyone would think he was peculiar enough
to
capture.
I'm so surprised that anybody would want to cap upon seeing him if the first instinct is not to kill. Like, I don't know what kind of person we're dealing with.
Yeah, they're fucked up.
There's something wrong.
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
So you see the bars of a cage, and then looking out a little bit further, you see that this cage is, it seems to be, like, mounted on top of a horse, almost. It's kind of what you're feeling like. It's like maybe, it seems like you're mounted between the horse's ears in a sort of Mad Maxian, like,
oh, yeah.
You know?
This is where Gary belongs. I'm no longer worried.
They're using him as a blood bag.
It's Gary riding the horse
on the head.
Gary is not. Well, Gary is in a cage that is strapped to the head of this horse.
Okay.
So that's where Gary is, and Gary communicates to you by speaking out loud.
Well, if he's in a dangerous position, he can whisper, and I can still hear him. He doesn't have to be...
He whispers out loud.
He whispers out loud.
He whispers out loud. I genuinely don't remember if I've ever given him a voice.
No, Gary has never spoken. Obviously, Gary has never spoken.
Everyone's gaslighting me.
I was just in on the bit. I was just like, yeah, I'm going to get in on this. I don't know if it's true or not.
I couldn't remember, so I just
went
along
with it. I know for sure. I never talked.
Fucking knew it.
So, whispers out loud to you. I was captured upon entering the perimeter of the camp. I am now considered a totem. I cannot escape this cage and only hope there will come a moment where I can be freed. They are heading towards the water. I will be at the water's edge in less than a day.
Oh my god. It's very dignified.
Dude, Gary's hot.
Kind of got a little Shatner energy going.
Yeah, a little bit of Shatner. A little bit of, I get the sense that he's a no-nonsense military man.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love that for Gary. It's a personality trait.
All right.
right.
Okay. One last thing that Gary says is, Father, will I be free soon?
I try to say yes, but I can't. I say out loud in the war room, I say,
that's an affirmative, soldier. Papa's coming for you.
And the connection with Gary is gone. You do not know if Gary heard you or not.
All right, so where's the burning ones?
You guys, we have a member of our squad that's been taken captive. It's pretty grim.
Fran starts counting on her fingers. She's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, we're all here.
It's Gary.
What?
Gary, they've taken him.
Who's Gary again?
Our finest soldier. Gary.
They have Slugbird captive?
Yes. They've mounted him on top of a horse like some kind of sick...
Totem?
Totem.
There you go.
Which is specifically what he told me he was.
Why?
It's unclear. Probably because he's such a powerful fighter, they knew that he could deeply intimidate anyone who came across them.
I mean, he is a lot.
Point is, they're headed toward the water, which I think means that they're going to go to... across to where to where the I didn't get specifics. I was just said that Gary was captured.
Okay.
He is being used as a totem.
Okay.
And that they're headed towards the water.
Okay, so
we can assume that they're going to some location.
Okay. Probably to a location. That's great. Corbin, thanks for that information.
Shut up, Fred. If I were a betting man, I would say Rudval, because that's the main dwarven harbor city area.
Safia cuts in.
That's a location, too.
Shut up.
Safia cuts in and says, I believe you're right. Most people don't even know about Onya, and I don't think the Burning Ones would be aware of it. However, if they're approaching the water now, it means we don't have much time to make our move.
Right.
The assembled group looks over the map, and the overwhelming number of tokens that Safia has laid out to represent Torva's armies. Prince Azam picks one up, turns it over in his hand, thoughtfully. He says, well, who's got a plan?
I do. Actually, I have a plan that I've been formulating for quite some time. I'll need a strike team of children.
Pardon?
So the conversation stretches late into the night, with everybody talking about the various possibilities, the plans, the resources you have at hand to defeat Torva. And actually, you've already planned what you want to do, and that's something we will... release in a bonus episode.
Yes.
It's sonically horrible, but I really hope you guys will enjoy it if you're subscribed to the Patreon.
Yes.
However, for those who don't want to torture themselves, why don't you guys just give me a little taste of your plans here? So you guys discuss things like...
Big! Like how big? Like bigger than a house? Way bigger. I can't even conceptualize that.
And other plans, like...
And then it come down and smoosh them.
Wow! That's brilliant!
Yeah. Wait, how exactly would that work? You also discuss things such as...
And our dad will be there, and he's gonna kick their ass!
All right, you seem very sure about that.
It'll happen.
He can do anything!
You go through all these ideas. Everybody has reactions to them.
Everyone lives them so much.
But at the end of the meeting, you have a plan. The next weeks are a blur of activity as work begins on these plans that you made with your war council. The artificers, both the magical builders of Estra and the gnomish mechanists from Madria, begin work on an enormous contraption of metal and magic. Even some of the dwarves, led by Trek, Selny's husband, huddle carefully under parasols and wide-brimmed hats that block out their view of the sky so that they can come and lend their expertise to the behemoth project, especially where it will be placed. Corbin, what's one thing that you do to prepare?
Corbin's gonna go to sleep.
Naturally.
What are you doing in your sleep?
I want to talk to Pavia.
Okay. So you fall asleep. You fall into the realm of dreams. You are caught in Pavia's milky white hands. And she looks down at you and says, Corbin, that's an awful noise to make.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I didn't think you'd pick up so fast.
Corbin, we are on the eve of the largest battle of this age. Mm. I am... Of course I will pick up on the first ring.
Thank you. I'm just used to being abandoned by people, so that's really nice to hear. Jesus. I was wondering if you could get into contact with Selny and maybe send her some dreams of what we're planning to do, and then maybe send me some dreams of where she is at and what's going on with them, if they're getting 3 square meals a day, and how their society is doing.
I see.
As a whole.
I see. The dreams of the dwarves are not easy for me to access, as they do not want me in them.
Mm, they hate magic, yep.
However, something has happened recently. Their dreams slipped through. Let me see what I can find.
Thank you.
And Pavia disappears. You are left alone in this white dreamscape for some time, an indeterminate time. Time does not exist here. So when Pavia comes back, she looks very grave. And she kneels down in front of you so that you two are at eye level.
I don't like this. This seems bad. I don't like this.
I'm afraid the dreams of the dwarves are quite bleak.
Okay, is Selny alive?
She is. Okay. I have found her dreams. But it will be easier simply to show you.
Ooh, okay.
And she passes a hand over the filmy liquid surface of the ground of this dreamscape. And as she passes her hand over it, it changes into a black and white scene. It looks like something out of a nightmare. The dwarven citizens are locked into their homes, the doors and windows boarded shut, and spores pumped into the buildings. You see this all happening from a high angle, and you see Falda as presumably Selny's eyes that you're looking through. So you see Selny look over at Falda, who shakes her head and says, come on, let's see if we can get people out of the next block before they come through. And then they move on. The next block is the same, and they keep moving through these streets as people are herded into homes. And finally, they get to a district that has not been hit yet, and they spring into action, getting as many people out as they can until the soldiers come. And then it's just running, and the dream ends. So Pavia looks to you, Corbin. She says, what message would you like me to send them?
Okay, let them know that we're coming, and let them know when we're coming, and where we're coming,
and
how we're coming, and why we're coming. And
Pavia takes your hand and says, I will let them know that help is on the way.
Thanks, Pavia. Give Selny a little kiss for me on the forehead. Say it's for me.
She smiles and kisses your forehead, and you wake up.
Oh.
In the coming days, altars are set up throughout the settlement. And while the Estrans are at first wary of the idea that they should pray to gods other than Mary and Kai, Mary leads the first service to channel power through words and offer prayers to the small and forgotten gods who have aided you and you hope will aid you still. To Pavia, the truth who was killed but will not die. To Jambo, maker of masks, singer of songs, the great pretender who only wanted to put the world right. To the Grey, the child who became the father, who rules the shadows and half-light. The rest of the camp followers, the ones who don't follow Mary, they take up the prayer as well. They go to these altars and lead small offerings to the gods, say small prayers, tell them about their day. You don't know, but you feel. You feel something is growing as they speak to these gods. Slake, during all of this, what are you doing to prepare?
I think what I'm going to want to do to prepare for the battle, well, I've got this Dragon Slayer sword now, so I think I want to kind of get used to the feel of it and practice with it so I'm ready to use it in the battle. Mm-hmm. And I have these gloves, too, for the missile snaring.
Yes.
That let me, like, catch projectiles. So I think I'd probably want to go and see Namavi, my mentor, and train with her.
All right, so you head over to the Orcish camp, which is the best established of all of the camps of all the people who've come to help you. The orcs are nomads. They are used to striking down their camp and setting it up in a new place the next day. While some of the other groups maybe have had a little bit more trouble, maybe needed more help from the Estrins, the orcs have just been cruising along, and they have set up a little training grounds, and Namavi is there working with some younger warriors. But when she sees you, she looks at all of them and says, "All right, start running." And the recruits just take off. And Namavi looks at you and says, "Slake, it's good you've come." And she turns around and rummages in like, she's got a little sort of bag that she's got hung on one of the posts of the training ground. And she reaches down into her bag and she pulls out a box. And it's wrapped in like a handkerchief, and she hands it to you. "Slake, I made you lunch."
Yeah! Oh! I immediately tear up, and I grab Namavi in a big hug.
Aww. "Slake, this is inappropriate."
I say, "You made me lunch, you big softy."
"Well, anyway, what do you need?"
I wanted to train. I got this new sword. It's supposed to be really effective against dragons. But you know, I mean, I've been so used to using the picks and stuff, I thought it'd be good. And then I actually got these special gloves for projectile grabbing. So,
and as soon as you say that, she grabs like a small rock from the dash, just chucks it at you.
Yes.
Immediately. No warning.
Yes, and I wasn't ready. And so I do get just like hit by the rock. And
Namavi shakes her head and she goes, "You're absolutely right. You need to train."
And I smile with tears in my eyes and I say, "It's just like old times."
So you guys spend some time training. Namavi, she takes up her own sword and takes you through some of the stances for a one-handed sword, all the while just at random intervals throwing rocks at you.
Yes.
And every time one hits you, she just says, "Shameful."
Shameful. That would
be... Oh, I love it.
After some time, once you are sufficiently covered in bruises and you have a big old bump right in the middle of your forehead,
mm-hmm.
Namavi says, "Enough. Eat your lunch."
"I think I'm getting the hang of it."
"You've shown improvement. Come back here tomorrow and we'll work more."
"Thanks, Namavi. When all this is over, you'll have to come visit my art gallery."
I would like that.
And I, like, have a very, like, smug, conspiratorial, like, look on my face. I'm, like, looking around, like, "Do you guys see this?"
"It's like, before you go, I have something I want to discuss with you. Come here."
Okay, yeah.
She crosses her arms. She steps close to you and looks around to make sure, like, nobody else is really listening in. And she says, I've been thinking about this for a few days. That Torva. He must know where we are, right?
Yeah, I would imagine.
Then where is he? If it were me, and I was a war god who'd lived for thousands of years and fought thousands of wars, I'd be testing our position, sending in monsters or fighters, army, troops, whatever, wear us down before we start our invasion. He's not done anything. I don't like that.
Yeah, you're right. It's can't be anything good. I mean, I'm sure he's working on something over there. I know that there was another dragon he was trying to get resurrected, so... It could be that he's focused on that, or another project that we don't even know about.
Yes. I fear he doesn't see us as a threat.
Well, maybe that'll be to our advantage.
I think you're right. There's nothing better than an enemy that underestimates you.
You're so fucking cool, Namavi.
And she holds out her hand and she takes your forearm. Handshake of kings.
Yes!
And she says, this war god won't know what hit him.
I give her a little salute.
All right. Some days later, Laika leads an expedition team to locate one of the fallen pieces of Estra, which landed in the jungle nearby. When she returns a week later, the wizard on the expedition team opens a portal to bring Mary through. It is a piece of the forest, which has stubbornly clung to life all this time since it crashed to the world below. The massive chunk of land soars above the surrounding jungle. The rough-barked trees and pale blossoms starkly different from the lush vegetation on the ground around it. Mary turns to the team and signs, "This will be perfect." Fran, while this is happening, what do you do to prepare?
As ever, Fran wants to go do some sneaky business, so she sneaks off to any place where she can be alone and in the dark.
Yeah, so probably, I mean, there's some basements in the buildings. Like,
yeah.
I'll say the library has a basement where they keep, like, old records and stuff.
Okay, yeah. Fran goes down there, and she blocks the door behind her, and she presses her hands together in front of her face, and a circle of symbols spreads from her feet and starts to glow further and further out around her, and she says, "Fuck! Bastard! Damn it!" And she summons a demon.
Which one?
She's gonna summon her little baby, Barlgura.
Okay, Barlgura, you're up!
Oh, Franika, I didn't think I'd be hearing from you again so soon.
Hi. So, hello.
Itching for death?
No.
Might I lend you a hand?
No, stop. You're being weird. Listen, I need to make a deal. Can I make it with you, or do I need to talk to your boss?
Well, let's not get my boss involved.
Well, he's got to be involved at some point.
Let's lay down the terms, dear. We'll go over it. You might regret this later, but...
Yeah, I'm sure I will. All right, look. I have interest in the void coming up here.
Ooh!
Yeah, I might need some real estate or something. And I don't want me and my friends to be unprotected when we're there.
Do you think me a landlord with infinite void apartments just ready to go for you to whim?
This is why I wanted to talk to your boss.
Well, my boss isn't available. You'll have to deal with me.
Whatever. Okay, so...
Middle management's a bitch, I know.
Yeah, I'm starting to sense that. Look, what I can offer you is... all the food you can eat, baby.
And by food, I assume you don't mean your measly little mortal scraps.
I am not food.
Well, what do you think you are?
Like,
That doesn't matter.
If you're not food, why are you here?
Because I'm going to kill the forces. Oh.
Well, now that is intriguing. Oh, Franika, you always know just how to titillate me. I hate you so.
I hate you too. Nasty. So what do we do? Do we have to shake on it? If you help me do this, you can consume whatever's left.
All right, you have a deal.
Okay, I hold out my hand over the edge of the circle.
Barl Gura takes his monkey hands, sticks his little hands in his chest, opens up a chest cavity.
What?
And you see a rhythmically beating black heart. And he says,
sign on the dotted line right here. Squeeze the heart.
What the fuck?
And we will be entwined.
Fran slowly reaches in, which I'm assuming is like...
Yeah, it's nasty, dude. There's like some spikes and teeth in there, too.
And she like faces away with her body and her face, but she squeezes.
You squeeze the heart, and it collapses into a goo in your hand. And as you pull your hand away, it is covered in this black ichor that spreads up to your elbow and then fades away. But as you look at your hands, your nails have turned completely black.
The contract is sealed, Franika. I hope you don't regret it.
I dismiss Barl Gura.
No way! What? Barl Gura wanted to have more conversation, but okay.
Okay. Now, Barl Gura, he eats, like, souls?
Mm. Yeah.
That's, like, what all demons
they
eat, right?
Eat, they eat, like, magic and souls and basically everything that is, right?
Yeah. Yep, exactly. They want to consume the world that is. And the thing is, like, everything that is has magic, like, innately in it. Mm-hmm. So that's why demons want to eat the world that is, because it's just all kind of low-level magic. So, Fran, you now have your cool black nail polish and packed with a demon.
All right. And then Fran sighs and says, okay, one more deal. And she goes to find Dawson.
All right. And you find Dawson. He has set up, like, when you guys saw him, he had just set up his booth and he had a couple magic items and you guys, you know, picked from that. His booth has since expanded considerably. He has several tables which have various items on them, some of them magic, some of them not, some of them that he's saying are magic, and you, Fran, can absolutely tell they are not. Like, you guys have been encountering Dawson sort of in the wild so far, but now you've found him in his element. He has set up shop here in your camp. And as you approach, he raises a hand and says, hail, Franika! Welcome back. Can I interest you in any of my fine wares? What about these? And he holds up a bag of marbles, which is just, in fact, a bag of marbles.
Lost that?
Your wit is razor sharp as always.
All right. Look, I want to make a deal.
And he leans forward over his table and says, is this a deal that you want to be public, or is this just between you and me?
The second one.
Then, please, come into my office. And he motions to this wildly colored tent that he's set up behind his tables.
All right, Fran's ears are, like, up to her shoulders. She's like, ugh.
You're making a deal with a literal demon. You're like, no big deal.
Yeah, whatever. But this is wrong.
This is crossing
a line. Far, dude.
So you head into Dawson's tent, and lounging on the cushions is Diamond. You know, after his performance last night, he's been giving these inspirational performances to the troops. Mm. And Diamond is back there lounging, eating grapes. And Dawson says, oh, Diamond, dear, be gone. And Diamond hops up and goes, just salutes him and heads out the back of the tent.
Oh, bye.
Diamond!
Fran sits down. She leans her elbows on her knees. And she says, what I need from you is weapons. Bows and arrows specifically. We only have one weapon god on our side. And I think... we need more than what we have.
I see. Well, I might have some suppliers I can tap into who may be able to get us a large number of archery equipments, bows, arrows, bowstrings, fletching, arrowheads.
I get it.
Shafts.
Okay.
the curvy part of the bow.
Yeah, the curvy part, yeah.
yes. I
need all that shit.
I hate this guy.
I may have somebody I can tap into, but what's in it for me?
Safety in the void.
And this he perks up at. Safety in the void, you say? How do you propose to grant me that? I am but a small and pathetic demigod, and I cannot create my own safe spaces in the void.
Well, I'm not small and pathetic. And I'm a lot more powerful than you think I am. And I have friends in places you might not expect. And can she do, like, sort of like half of a demon summoning and...
Like maybe like your shadow gets, like, turns into Balgura.
Yeah. She presses one fist with one finger up to her hand and her shadow expands behind her and forms into a horrible Balgura monkey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With glowing eyes.
Can you roll me an intimidation check?
Yeah, but I don't have good intimidation.
Oh, yeah.
Also, you know, I'll give you advantage for your demon pact.
I got 15.
Okay, you got 15. So Dawson leans back from you. And he sort of gives a shiver. He goes, "You do have friends in unexpected places, I see. Well, before I say anything else for Nika... Allow me to be serious for a moment. You are messing with forces I don't think you understand. And that is not me being condescending. That is me being very, very old.
Well, you're also being condescending. But okay.
Be careful what you offer them. They do not deal like I do. Fairly, for the most part. Everything they say, everything they promise, has much higher price than you think it does. But, that being said, you have offered me something I want and have wanted for quite a long time. After all, this battle, I hope it goes well for you, but if it doesn't, well, I don't want to be here to find out the consequences. So, I will accept your offer. I have my own... contingencies, anyway. But I will take an extra layer of protection. An extra guarantee, if you will. And I will get you your bows and arrows. But I say this to you as a friend, Franika, and I know you don't consider me a friend.
Yeah, we're not friends.
But I say this to you in the spirit of friendship. Be very careful with how you proceed. And don't let your friends get tangled up in it.
That's exactly why I'm doing this.
Very good. Then we have a deal, and he holds out his hand to you.
Oh my god, thank god, a hand. Fran shakes his hand.
And he clocks your black fingernails. You see him see your hand. And he takes his hand back a little more carefully than he put it out. Good day to you, Franika.
Good day to you, dickwad.
Thank you.
Was that me?
Yeah, that's you.
Okay. That's you.
What was my Barlgura voice?
Franika.
Oh, Franika.
Yeah, right. Proto-Corbin voice is what it is.
Okay, that's right.
I had to listen to a bit from like arc 2 or 3.
Was it when Corbin still had an accent?
Yeah, when Corbin still had an accent. Right? It was very weird. I was like, who is this old man?
I dropped it. Like
so subtly,
very subtly.
Yeah, it like tailed off. Yeah, it tailed off, and you went from like weird old man to boy, to weird old boy.
To weird old boy. Yeah, I got there eventually.
But you were very. That was still very much in your like snooty aristocrat old man voice era.
Voldemort voice.
Yeah. So anyway.
Okay.